So we're together. We are learning, continuing our learning of Korach HaTzadikim. We took a little break last week, and to greater appreciate what Kiddusha is all about in the context of Purim, thanks to Rabbi Soloveitchik. What I actually didn't realize is that, in addition to it being in Drashas Harav, it's also the only essay from the Rav Soloveitchik in the Rav Soloveitchik Megillah, which I already put away. Oh well. But it's in the back there. It's titled differently, but it's all about Kiddusha, and I enjoy that a lot. But now we're jumping back into Korach HaTzadikim, and Baruch Hashem, we're on chapters Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis. Next week will be our last doubled up shirim, and then we'll actually split into individual ones because the topics are set up that way. And we're moving along. This is very exciting. There are very few svarim that I feel like I've learned this well. And so when we talk about shtika and sheker, whenever we have these two prakim, we try and understand the parallels between them, the paradigm. How in the world are these two things existing on the spectrum? Because Korach HaTzadikim talks about spectrum. And we would likely think, at least I would for sure think, that if I were to put sheker on one side of a spectrum, what should be on the opposite side? MS. Falsehood, truth, those are two things that sit on two ends of a pendulum. But the Korach HaTzadikim doesn't have sheker and MS next to each other, but it would seem that the Korach HaTzadikim contrast shtika and sheker, and then next week we'll talk about MS and chanifus. We'll talk about truth and flattery. And there's a deep message here that we'll explore a little bit tonight about one, the opposite of truth most definitely is falsehood, but oftentimes the temptation to not speak honestly is more toward flattery than it is toward just outright lying. The temptation or the pull toward sheker is often not a function of, should I be honest now or should I lie? Life is not that black and white. And so I think what the Korach HaTzadikim is expressing to us in this paradigm is that the boundary toward sheker might actually be shtika. Maybe the best way to avoid sheker, to avoid falsehood, is actually to speak less, that rather than is to be fully, wholly committed toward truth, toward MS. But we'll have plenty of opportunities to explore that next week. If we don't fully explore sheker this week, then you might trickle into MS next week. But let's jump in. Let's appreciate really how our shtika and sheker are connected. We look at the very first source, at the very beginning, and we're in Chaf Aleph. The first source, as usual, we are following the paragraphs and pagination of the Sepharia, just because it's the most consistent. And let's go. We talk about how hashtika v'advarim, that we have speech and we have silence. I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. This is the famous quote from Avos that we've likely heard before. Kol yamei gadalti min ben hakamim. My whole life, I've grown up amongst tamim hakamim. V'lo matzati leguf tov el hashtika. And I've never found anything that's as good for the body as silence. Silence is good for you. It's not just that it's golden, but it is healthy for your body. The Maharal discusses what makes it healthy specifically for your guf. We're not really going to get into that so much this evening. But Rabbi Gamliel is recommending silence. V'chein amar Shlomo HaMelech alav haShalom. We also see Shlomo HaMelech tell us in Mishlei, Gam alav makrish kakam yuchashev, that even someone who's not so intelligent, when they're not talking, you don't know that they're unintelligent. And that harkens to the quote we have on the cover in the spirit of avoiding sheker. I quoted it from Abraham Lincoln. It's also been quoted from Mark Twain. And some of the Bikiyim aren't sure it's either one of them. It might be from 1907, but it's very unclear really where this quote originated. It's really seemingly coming from Mishlei. But it's a quote that I first heard from Dov Lerner. Apparently, this is what his mom has on their fridge growing up. That it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and remove all doubt. And so when it comes to shtika, if someone's not talking, you don't know whether they're insightful, whether they've got a lot to share, whether they don't. That's what Shlomo HaMelech wants to tell us. And then finally, we say, Amar HaKacham, Kishani Medaber. And here we're going to really see the connection between shtika and sheker. When I speak, who most shall be? My speech sort of rules over me. Whatever I've said, now I'm committed to. Ki'im ani medaber ela adam davar she'eino hagu. If I say something to somebody that's not appropriate, osu adibir most shall be. That speech, that phrase, that thing that I said, that's now ruling over me. Now I've got to go apologize. Now I've got to pick up all the pieces. We'll talk about this more in Lashon Hara, but when you say something, you gotta track it and you have to fix it if you said something bad. But when I don't speak, ani musho mila omro umil hastira. Then I'm good. I'm all set. I haven't lost anything. As soon as some speech leaves our mouths, now we're really at the mercy of our speech. And we see this for sure when it comes to social media, that someone tweets something and it's innocuous. They don't really intend for it to be such a problem, and people don't appreciate it. But now that they've said it, now that they've, I guess, written it, tweeted it, now it's out there, and now they could end up losing their job. They could end up becoming hated. I saw Elliot Leibowitz quote a hometown hero, your hometown comedian, that you'll either changing the line that I think, I don't know exactly who said it, but I know it's quoted in Batman the Dark Knight, that you'll either live to be a hero, or you'll live long enough to see yourself become the villain. He flipped it to you'll live long enough to see yourself become a villain on social media. That's the world we live in, but it attenuates it, and it points out that premise then that the Ochor Tzedekim is pushing, that as soon as you've said something, now you're at its mercy. Whatever you've said is out there in the world, and there's nothing you can do about it. And so when we talk about shtika, staying silent, you're actually much closer in some ways to where we really want to be. In some ways, it's much more impressive to not speak. But now let's look at how he describes falsehood. We're going to jump to the next parak, in the very first paragraph, paragraph Bays, where he explains what sheker is all about. And now we're in what we officially call the first source. We say, "V'zeh davar yadua l'kol." Everyone knows this. She'ah sheker va'emes tekufim b'lev echad. That truth and falsehood—they're really pushed together. They're one in the same. They're both part of the same heart. They're not these two contrasting things. They're not at two opposite ends of the spectrum where we're deciding: do I want to be good? Do I want to be bad? It's not light and darkness. This isn't a Star Wars reference. This is much more so. They're right next to each other. They're both in our hearts, very much so. Yesh adam mezuyaf afilu she'edu b'vada she'adavar sheker. You'll have these people who, even though they know something is sheker, who nimshak akrab, he'll still follow it. He's still being pulled toward it. Ki shekein, kol shekein, she'yesh rayos letzadim l'shaker, she'domu l'yos emes, she'bevada yimshak akar sheker. And for sure, when there's any sort of indication, any sort of reason to argue that maybe it's good, then they'll follow it. Aval yesh adam amisi. You're going to have someone who's a truthful person, not someone who's a charlatan, not someone who's a liar, but someone who really is honest. But when they're exposed to sheker, when they're exposed to falsehood, v'lo yasa sheker ela kishish svaros lo sheker, they're not going to do anything bad unless there are all these things pulling toward them. Sheker, falsehood, is really, it's compelling sometimes. Az hu nimshak akra sheker, v'hachacham, but what does it mean to be wise? Yachakish hasvaros shel sheker v'chachmasav. What we want to try and do is we want to train ourselves to be wise enough to be able to differentiate. Is this MS? Is it checker? Is this truth? Or is it falsehood? And so just like we talked about in the beginning of our limud together, that Orchot Tzadikim, the whole goal is to sort of train ourselves to become our own Rebbeim, to become the kind of people that know how to navigate in the world of Midos. We want to train ourselves to be able to recognize what is checker and what's not. And what we're seeing here is that sometimes, it's not that we're malicious, but sometimes there's just checker out there, there's falsehood out there that our hearts are like pulling us toward. That it's hard to differentiate. Is this good? Is it bad? Is this truth? Is it falsehood? And so as soon as we open our mouths, as soon as we start talking, now we're already sort of towing the line of sheker versus MS. But when someone maintains shtika, when someone isn't speaking, we'll see exactly what it means to maintain shtika, then they're not going to have to worry about that. They're not going to be subject, their words will not be, they won't be at the mercy of their own words, and they're not going to have to worry about, is this right? Is it wrong? What I'm about to say, it's an opinion, but I think it's fact. They're not going to have to worry about all that because they're not entering into the picture. Shtika is a way to stay far removed from any of those problems. So what we point out here in the next paragraph at the bottom here is that so often our ideas, as much as we want to think that they're MS, so as much as we want to think that this is right, we're always influenced by our surroundings. We're always influenced by everything that makes us who we are. And so if we are more active, we're going to see things in a more active sense. If we're more lazy, we're going to see things in a more lazy sense. If we're more right-leaning, things look one way. If we're more left-leaning, they look a different way. So from every perspective, we're always going to be seeing things differently. And if that's the case, then we don't really ever know definitively that what I'm about to say, what I'm about to share, is emes l'amito, that what I'm saying is true, that I'm avoiding sheker entirely. And so perhaps better to maintain shtika, to stay, we'll say, silent. Although it doesn't, we're not saying to stay silent for real. And what that really leads us into, onto our next page, into our number two source, defining silence. What does it mean to uphold shtika? What is shtika all about? Shtika literally means silence. It means to not utter a single word. Efshar. It's not possible that Torah is encouraging us to walk around as mutes. So what is it encouraging? We bring seemingly a chazal, although I couldn't find... it's a chazal from the Yalkut Shimoni in Baaloska, but I couldn't find it actually in the Yalkut Shimoni, but I'll trust that it's actually there. And it's a mashal of two guys who come in front of a king, and they are... And they're supposed to argue that whether Dibur is better or whether Shtika is better. It's like a kind of a funny argument, but this is sort of one of those classic paradigms that show up in Chazal. And they're both in front of the king, and the Dibur guy, he gets up and he starts waxing parables, and he's eloquent. He's talking about how wonderful speech is, and how speech is what crowns kings, and it's what moves the world forward. And Dibur is so wonderful. And the king's clapping, he's all excited, and he says, "Oh, that's great." And then the king turns to the Shtika guy, he turns to the guy representing silence and says, "What do you have to say?" And as the Shtika guy is about to speak, the D-word guy jumps in, the first one, and says, "He can't start talking. He's supposed to be defending Shtika. He's supposed to be defending silence. He can't start talking in my modality. That's not in order to defend his. He's against me. And that's an illegal maneuver. It's not fair. Shtika means he's not going to say a word. And so really, he shouldn't be making any argument whatsoever." The king's like, "Oh, that's interesting." But sure enough, our friend, the advocate of Shtika, jumps in and he says, "My friend, you misunderstand what Shtika is all about. Shtika does not mean," and this is a definition we got to appreciate and understand. This is sort of the ikar of what we're going to learn tonight about Shtika. We're going to run with this. Shtika does not mean absolute, utter silence. Jews are never supposed to be completely quiet. What Shtika means is a kind of silence when it's not necessary to speak. And we'll see what he says right here in the bold. Amar lo, lo kach amar Shlomo. Shlomo Melech didn't say that shtika means total silence. Lo amar shetiya yoshev eshoseh kecheresh. You're not supposed to be like a mute. Ela amar, he says in Mishlei, berov dvarim lo yachdal pesha vechoshek svasav maskil. And so he ends up saying that just in a multitude of words and speaking a lot of different ways, you're likely to end up sinning. That's not an ideal. But someone who refrains from talking, someone who holds back his lips, that person is wise. You're going to find wisdom when you hold back from speaking. Not to say you're never supposed to speak, but shtika is the ability to hold back and to not say whatever is on our mind, to not just blurt out things all the time. This is strong muster for me. And the Maharal, in his Nesivos Olam, he has a Nesiv HaShtika. Yeah? Oh, we'll get there. Don't worry. Well, so the Maharal is going to unpack just this general concept of shtika, and then the next page, we're actually going to get into specific categories of speech and how shtika would influence those things. So you're right on point. You're two steps ahead as usual. And so the Maharal is unpacking this medrash. Quotes the same medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni Baaloska and says, "What's the deal with these two advocates? What are we talking about?" He says that shtika is not so you're supposed to stay silent, as we pointed out. He says in the second line in the bold, "Ela kasher hadibur lahotzi ma'ala poel al yitei hadibur as hadibur hu yafe." What you're supposed to speak sometimes. If your speech is going to lead towards some positive result, then it's wonderful. In the world of Maharal, in the world really of Jewish thought, there's a concept of koach and poel. Koach is the potential. Koach is when something could happen, whereas poel is when it's actually happening. A lot of things might exist in the potential, but if you can't actually make them happen, then that's not really worthwhile. Something might exist in potential, but until you speak it out, until you bring it to someone's attention, it might not exist. You might have someone who's so capable of doing so much for the community. You might have a friend who could be a great artist, who could be a great balas chesed, who could know a ton of Torah, but until you present that to them, until you use speech as a vehicle to take them from the potential to the actual, to the poel, it's not going to exist. The Maharal says, when you use speech, speech is always going to be a conduit toward making things go from the potential to the actual, to take the theoretical and bring it into reality. Speech concretizes things. Sometimes you have an amorphous idea and you don't really know how to concretize it, when someone's able to take that idea and put it into words, now you have the idea for real. Rav Chaim Brisker, in the context of learning, but it applies really in every area of life, says if you can't verbalize it, then you don't know it. You can't say, oh, yeah, I understood that. Oh, what did he say? I can't really put it in the right phrase. You know, it's like really complicated. You don't know it. Only until you can concretize it, you can verbalize it, you can bring it from the theoretical into the actual, into something concrete, something real, something with limitations in the context of a sentence, only then do you really know it. And so if that's the limitation of knowledge, that's the limitation of taking something theoretical and making it actual, then shtika is about only using your ability to speak to further things along that process, to get things closer from the theoretical to the actual. He adds in one other thing in the bold at the bottom here, vinira. He says, vinira lomar, ki bal ha-medrash hazeh sober. The author of this medrash seems to think, ki hashtika legamre, utter silence, kasha hu ben abrios, gam ke maguna. That's also a problem. You're not supposed to be entirely silent when you're amongst people. Kasha nirash enum ura ben abrios, because then you're not really joined in, you're not really amongst the people. When you're sitting around in the cafeteria with your friends, you're not supposed to be silent because, oh, maybe what I'm about to say now is not going to further an agenda, and because it's not going to bring us closer toward from a koach el hapoel. That's weird. And so we're about to see, but one of the things Maharal is getting at is that it doesn't necessarily have to be Torah things. We're not suggesting that someone should only ever speak in words of Torah. That's like a beautiful ideal, but it's not so realistic. But
you're not suggesting that.
No, Khalilah. That's not how the world operates. So we'll see. That's what we're going to go right now. We're going to go that now into paragraph Dalet. But what the Maharal is pointing out is that don't think for a moment, don't misunderstand that the goal of shtika is to minimize our speech to being something productive, but it doesn't mean that you should become a mute whenever you're sitting around at the Shabbos table unless there are divrei Torah being spoken. That there's a balance that we're going to strike here, and that balance, it really is the goal of shtika. Shtika is not like an ideal that we can never achieve. Shtika is actually not as far out as we might have thought. Shtika is actually finding that proper balance. And maybe it's going to be more towards silence than it is towards speaking, but it's not going to be the extreme of utter silence, of keeping our mouths shut all the time. So, now we're on page three. On page three at the top, we're in number four, although it's also paragraph four, wonderful. All in the chapter about shtika. We're going to bring two examples. So this is something... This is something interesting in the Orkot Tzaddikim. Sometimes the Orkot Tzaddikim is quoting a Medrash without telling us he's quoting a Medrash. Sometimes it's quoting like a more explicit Chazal without saying it explicitly. Sometimes it'll say Amar HaChacham. This is not my first time, but this is the first time really learning this well, and so I'm sort of we're figuring it out as we go. But numerous times we've seen Amar HaChacham or Amar LaChacham, and it's a Amar Chazal. He's just not giving us the full context. Maybe because the author didn't have access to all of the details and can't quote to us chapter and verse where it's from, or for some other motivation. Ironically, when the Maharal will quote Orkot Tzaddikim from time to time, to some extent, the framework of Nesivos Olam, where the Maharal talks about Midos, is built off of Orkot Tzaddikim, who preceded him by probably about 100 years. And sometimes he'll quote the exact same Medrash, but he'll quote it chapter and verse, because the Maharal was in Prague, he was in these massive Jewish communities, had access to everything, so he could mamash look it up. He could tell you exactly where it is, but not everyone was able to do that. Oftentimes we'll see, particularly in earlier sources, but even in more recent ones, you have rabbis who know something, but they can't tell you exactly where it's from, because they didn't have access to the materials. You know, the Chacham Tzvi is one rabbi who had access to everything, and so he's always quoting perfectly. A lot of other Achronim were not necessarily doing so. Even Rav Moshe Sternbach, who was a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, but also spent time in South Africa, for sure in his Divrei Torah on the Parsha, I haven't personally seen it come up in his Shalos Tshuvos. He'll say, I don't have the sefer right now, but it's somewhere in Parsha's bow. So-and-so says this. And so Amar HaChacham, it's Chazal. Whether it's formally in like a conventional Chazal or not, Amar HaChacham is referring to a rabbi. And so we're going to look at two breakdowns, really, of of shtika or of conversations that Or Chassidim was going to present. One is going to have four categories. One's going to have five categories. The four category one is going to be in ascending order. It's going to go from bad to good, and the five category one's going to go from good to bad. And we'll play a little bit with them. I happen to prefer the second categorization, but I guess everyone can decide on their own. I broke it down in English to make it a little easier. The Hebrew we've just got in paragraph form at the very top of page 4. We say, Amr l'chacham, they said to the rabbi, they said to the wise person, Mahuzeh shatam marav ashtika. How come your rabbi was so quiet? Amr loha dibur matzati nechlak l'arba chalakim. He's like, well, when I think about it, speaking really is broken down into four different categories. Echad kulo nezek. One, it's basically just all harmful. And then we're skipping Hasheni, Nezek Mitzad Echad. The second one, it's partially harmful, but not entirely harmful. Hashlishi, Lo Nezek Velo Toelos. It's not bad, but it's not necessarily good. It's not furthering this agenda that the Maharal discussed. It's not bringing something into the actual from the theoretical. Haravi, Kulo Lo Toelos. It's entirely Toelos. And what's the example of something that's entirely for the benefit, entirely positive? Kigon HaTorah Udvarim Shehim Tuluyim Ba. Like Torah and things that depend upon Torah. And so ostensibly we could assume that this isn't just specifically Torah, but it's also, you know, what are we going to eat so that we can accomplish Torah. It's discussing any and all mitzvos. It might even be involved in the building plans in order to build a base medrash so that we can learn Torah. But those are the four categories laid out. I don't want to get into them because I don't connect to that as much as the next section. This next section in Dalad, I titled Dalad Beis, says, Aval yeshchak my Torah ha-machalken es ha-dibur. No, we'll break it down into five different categories. Echad, mitzvah. First category is you're talking in terms of mitzvos. Hasheni, nizhar mimenu. One's being careful. Hashlishi, nimas. This is despicable. It's bad. Revi'i, ne'ahav. This one is, we could say, beloved. And the chamishi, mutter. It's permissible. And then we break down into them even further. And so what is number one mean? What is, when we're talking about mitzvos, that one's pretty clear. Mitzvah hainu l'daber b'divrei Torah v'yashamayim. This is when we're sharing divrei Torah. This is when we're in a shir or a vad. This is the explicit, I'm doing mitzvos right now. This is, if we were boys, this is when you feel like, oh, I need to be wearing a kippah. This is when you need to make sure that you're in a proper environment. There can't be anything smelly around. You need to be in a holy place because this is a holy activity. That's our first category. Our second category is nizhar mimenu, that you're guarding yourself. So it could go on edu sheker, nivlos peh, urechilos. You're trying to make sure that you don't say anything wrong. You're talking, and you're trying to ensure that there's nothing bad in your speech. Now that's number two. And the third category is nimas, it's despicable. She'en bo lo aver v'lo to'elas, kerov sipure olam, could go on the daber mizeh, she'nas ekvar. Now this is nothing special, but Orchis Hadikim says it's not really ideal. This is what we might call just random chatter. This is nothing significant. You're not furthering anything in the world. Nothing productive is happening from this conversation. You're just talking for the sake of talking. This is what we see all the time on various talk shows. It's literally called a talk show. The purpose is just for people to say things, but you're not necessarily learning more. You're not necessarily gaining more.
Form or something. There's no such thing. Even if you're just talking to create a connection with the person, it's still a purpose.
Okay. So, so let's keep looking and then we'll address, because it is worth wondering, where do like our regular conversations fit in? Where does talking about what Purim was like before our shiur started fit into these categories? That's a worthwhile question. But a third one thing that we suggested, it was talking politics, is talking about things that are happening in the world, and that is that is described as something that is despised. It's nimas. Now, what's our fourth one? I gotta find it here now. Our fourth one is ne'ahav. It's beloved. Hu adibur shemeshubach mishabeach ma'asim tovim umaguna ma'asim ra'im. This is conversations that praise good things and put down bad things.
I
you're praising tzaddikim, and you're talking about how wonderful righteous people are, and you're putting down bad people so people stay away. We're skipping the rest of that. And then finally, hamutter. The things that are totally mutter that are, we could say, parv. And what fits into that? Eating, drinking, achila v'shtiya, shar tzarakav, things that you just might need. I have to go buy nails from the hardware store. If you can avoid spending too much time talking about these kind of things, that is praiseworthy. But so what picture have we built? We start at the top that talking about Torah mitzvot, that is the ideal. That's where we want to be. Number two doesn't even seem to be descending. This is, you're not really saying anything. You're not talking per se. You're just trying to avoid not saying something bad. I don't want to speak Lashon Hara. I don't want to give false testimony. But I'm not pushing an agenda per se. I'm just trying not to take away from that agenda. Number three, we talk about things that are not good. You know, I misspoke. I don't think that it goes from good to bad. I think this is more amorphous. And number three is going to be things that are much bad. You're talking about things that have no benefit, that are not productive in any way, shape, or form. That's the description. Maybe the details that exist today are different than the details that existed back then. So the examples Yochai Tzadikim shares with us might not resonate as much. But that's the framework. Number four, and then we'll unpack it, is that you're praising things. You're furthering the agenda, seemingly, of doing good things in the world. You're not planning doing good things. You're not sharing Torah, per se, but you're trying to get toward that end. And then four, and then finally, number five, is that you're just entertaining. You're talking about whatever needs to get done. You're coordinating. It's a lot of coordination. It's funny that when couples get married, before they get married, there are very few responsibilities that they share. And when couples are dating, basically the only responsibility is you need to be in this place at 7:30, I need to be at this place at 7:30, and that's more or less it. Now you got to like figure out what you're going to do, but there's not that much coordination that goes on when you're just a couple that's dating. And as you grow in your relationship, you end up taking on more responsibility. But what ends up happening is you get engaged. Now you're talking a lot of details about wedding planning and parties and things like that, and where we're going to live and how this is going to work. A lot of Bed Bath & Beyond talk. A lot of Bed Bath & Beyond talk. Then you get married, and there's even more Bed Bath & Beyond talk. I think Bed Bath & Beyond basically, they somehow got in. They're like, they're kind of the focal point of marriage for some people, unfortunately. And there's Kala Mikva talk. There's a lot of Kala Mikva talk. And there's a lot of coordination. And there's texting. Let's figure out what's going on for dinner. And you know, if you look at a conversation of like a couple that's like about to get engaged, and so and she doesn't really know, but like they're very very close, and there's no coordination, there's not a lot of responsibility. The conversations are so sweet, and they're so and like they're all expressing like a deep feeling of connection that they have. If you fast forward a number of months to the time the couple's married, then like half of those messages are no longer like expressing love. It's like details. Did you take out the garbage? We need to go there. Did you take care of this? And it's all coordinating. When a baby's born, the text messages are very, very rarely expressing affection. It becomes very detail-oriented. What time does the baby eat? What time does the baby go to sleep? Are we taking care of this? Are you going to the doctor? Am I going to the doctor?
Because you see each other. You don't express it.
Yeah.
Then in text, you're like at a better level of where you're expressing it in person.
That's true. At the same time, the communication is still different, and there's definitely much more affectionate communication going on in the earlier stages before there's a relationship, for sure in the context of a text message. You're right. And in another time, in another context, we can talk about effective communication of couples in various stages of a relationship. But with the point being that you, at a certain point in time, you just need to deal with a lot of things. And sometimes the more of a connection you have, the more time you actually spend talking about what we're calling divrei hamutter, the divrei chol, the achila and shti and shar tzrachav. But the goal is not to talk about that. The goal is that the same amount of affection that you're sharing in your relationship when you have no responsibilities should be the amount of affection you're sharing when you're at the pinnacle of your relationship, when you're fully engaged, fully involved, and to minimize the amount of details you have to worry about. So now we cannot try and unpack, because what Miriam Rifka pointed out very, very poignantly is there are so many things that seemingly fit into category three, the Dvarim Shel Hevel, the things that are supposed to, that are despised, like listening to, say, a podcast. But Miriam Rifka.
I was going to say the opposite. I was going to say, well, Hefech, I think everything fits into category one. All it takes is a perspective change.
So I think if you really are embodying modern orthodoxy, and really, you could argue just Torah, it's very, and you know, we were talking about this before, and this is partially what Hasidus is all about. Chassidus is basically propelling the idea that everything I'm doing can be part of Avodas Hashem. Modern Orthodoxy looks at every area of study, every area of interest, as being something that can build my appreciation of Torah and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so, very few things that go on in the world are going to be removed from that. Rav Lichtenstein talked about, I heard this from my principal in high school, Rabbi Eli Rubin, that Rav Lichtenstein said that by reading certain works, classical works, by reading literature, you have a better appreciation of the human condition. And so he didn't say that reading Shakespeare is reading Musser. He didn't equate them that much. But he also appreciated that by reading Shakespeare, by appreciating who a person is, you get a better appreciation of what's a realistic goal for this entity that we call a person, what Musser could look like. And so you're right. I think I would totally agree that it's very easy to take something in Category 3 that we describe as despicable, turn that from shtika, from silence, into something productive, something that's furthering the goal, furthering an agenda. But it's only if you have the right perspective. And so when we talk about shtika, it's selective silence, it's also selective speaking. And maybe you can even take a conversation that seemingly is devoid of any holiness, devoid of anything productive, and you can transition and you can shift it, or you can just be mekadesh the entire thing with one word, with one line, with one thought that puts this conversation in the framework of Talmud Torah.
And isn't that cute? Like, you're going to have a lot of conversations that are going to be about movies and things that are so not what you would consider kadosh. But if you're gearing it towards getting this person to feel connected to you, and you spend months talking about things that are not kadosh, but eventually you create that connection where they can ask you a real question about their Judaism, those months have not been for naught. I thought they'd been difficult. Bless you.
Thank you.
Well, so, isn't that
so when we talk about developing a relationship, when you go on dates, please don't whip out this list and say, okay, we're going to try and make sure that we stay in the right categories. We don't want to get into any of the... That's not a good idea. But when you're developing a relationship, whether it's in the context of a Rebbe Talmud, whether it's in a male-female relationship, those things still come up. Rebecca and I had an NCSY of ours reach out to us and say, I've been dating this guy for a while, and I feel like I want to have more Torah in our conversations. And so NCSY actually has something called The Box, which was a bunch of games we developed for summer programs, but now people actually use it on dates. And they're like conversation cards. And, you could talk about random anything on your date. You could talk about, the fire hydrant you walked past, or you could have a guided, deliberate conversation about ideas. And so people will use that to infuse their dates with holiness. You can develop a connection in numerous different ways. You can develop a connection by talking about Divrei Hevel. You can also develop a connection by talking about something of real substance. I would argue, and at least suggest, that you'll develop a much closer and much more helpful connection by talking about real things than by talking about things that don't matter that much. And ultimately, we get into my favorite quote from Eleanor Roosevelt. This is genius. I quote it often. She said, great minds talk about ideas, average minds talk about events, and small minds talk about people. We want to be great minds. We want to be big. We want to talk about ideas. And so we could talk about events. We could be in Category 3, and we could... But as soon as we, like Mira Mirfka's pointing out, as soon as we take that event in Category 3 and turn it... We could turn it into a Category 1 topic. We can make it into an idea. When you talk about rebellions going on in certain parts of the world, when you talk about what's going on in politics, that can become an idea just that's based in what's going on in the world, or it can just be an event. And I would argue what happens in Kyiv and what happens in general in effective education and effective communication is that you find a way to create a foundation of Torah and a foundation of growth in whatever you're doing. That's just effective life. And so people who work in medicine, we had this conversation after one of our shiurim about one of our friends who's not in Clay Kodesh per se, who's studying something that doesn't feel like it connects so much. But when you're studying medicine, when you're studying people in some way, shape, or form, it is going to bring you closer if you know how to use this meat of shtika to put it in the right trajectory, put it in the right direction. Now, I apologize, we got to move on. We can unpack more, but I was already ambitious. Yeah, why not? Whatever.
I know we're all
That's true. I know. It's totally 1,000% my fault. You're right. What do we got?
No, I think it's mine, but together, okay. So shtika doesn't mean to be silent.
Yes.
That's the only question. I just want to confirm that when you say shtick, because people have a misunderstanding about what it means, it doesn't mean to be dumb.
No.
You, sorry.
No.
It means to be
Correct.
Focused.
Correct. But there are times when effective shtika is going to be utter silence, to not say a word, to just listen. And that's what we see here on the next page, on bottom of page 4, in paragraph 5. Paragraph, hey, v'kama v'komos tova shtika. There are times when shtika is good. And so one example Orchis Sadikim gives is when someone insults you, to stay quiet, to stay silent. And in some ways it's better to, just like it's better to stay silent and let people think you're dumb rather than prove it, it's also good to stay silent and let people think that you've been insulted, let them think whatever they want, rather than you sink to the level of someone insulting you and insult them back. We don't want to do that. At the same time, there are other elements of shtika we want. If you're sitting amongst wise people, that's what we see in the underline, in who Yoshe Bein Hachamim, Yishtok V'Yishmat Divrayim. Don't start talking when there are wise people around you, when you can just soak in that information. It would be foolish for you to start talking. There's a mashal, I think it's from the Dibbe Magid, but I'm not positive. But there's a mashal about a guy who the king wants to reward. And so as the reward, the king is all excited. He invites the guy to the palace, and he gives him a big bag, puts him into a room, and the king says, "You'll be in here for an hour. Take whatever you want from the room. I don't care. It's all yours." And the guy looks at the room, looks at his bag, and says, "What kind of chutzpah is this? The king wants me to clean up his garbage? I saved the king. I did a favor for the king. The king wants to reward me by letting him serve him more. I'm not interested. I'm going to get the king back. I'm going to take a nap." And so, sure enough, he takes a 58-minute nap. And at the end, the people knock on the door. The guy walks out. His bag is empty. And he's got a big grin on his face. He outsmarted the king. Sure enough, he gets back. He's talking to his friends, telling him how he outsmarted the king. What do the friends tell him? "You're a fool. You were in the king's treasure room. You had a bag you could fill with any treasure you wanted. All the king's most wonderful, sparkling treasures. You could have had gold and diamonds and gems. And you took a nap?" When we're in conversations, we have two options. We can either give or we can receive. We can either tell people what we think, and when we're talking, we're not gaining anything. Maharal, I believe, I couldn't find it, but I believe the Maharal says that when we're talking, we're not thinking. Which is why there are some people who are of the opinion that when you teach Torah, you're not fulfilling your obligation to learn Torah that day. I could spend from morning to night teaching Torah, which would be awesome, but I would not actually fulfill my obligation of Agisa Bo Yomam V'Laila until I guess say Kriya Shema, or until I learn Torah myself and not talk, until I just listen, or until I just consume. When we're in a conversation, we have the option of either I can be a nosen, I can speak, or I can listen. I can be a makago. I can say, the people sitting around me are experienced, they're wise, they're insightful. They have so much they can share with me. I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to listen. And so when we're in a conversation, whether the person is the biggest Rosh Yeshiva, the most experienced person with a top in their field, or whether they're just whoever's sitting across from me, if I listen, am I better off than if I were talking? If I were talking, would that really accomplish much? Maybe, like we were talking before, I need to talk because I want to steer this conversation in the direction of being productive, of being a consistent with the goals of the meat of shtika. But maybe, but just by listening, by not saying a word, I'm actually going to gain a lot. That's something that's worth thinking about. You're right. It'll work out. I'm not so worried. Halavai, that should be the issue, that everyone wants to hear so much more. At the end, in this paragraph, Orchis Sadikim points out that im shomea shechaver medaber, yishto gachi yisayim dvarav. If your friend's talking to you, don't say a word until your friend finishes. There's an awesome story with Aaron Lichtenstein. Aaron Lichtenstein, as I hope we know, was clean shaven. He didn't fit in. He had a nice kippah. He was an unimpressive figure. He didn't look like a Rosh Yeshiva per se. So in 1970, when he showed up in Gush Etzion, when he showed up in Yeshivat Har Etzion, when he showed up at the Gush, he was supposed to be like this American rabbi. And the way Rabbi Moshe Targan puts it, if you think Israelis don't think highly of Americans now, Kal Vachomer al Achas Kama Vakama, 50 years ago, they didn't think highly of Americans. So at the time, the top Talmud in the Gush walked over to this allegedly impressive rabbi in the United States, from the United States, and wanted to ask him a question. But he wasn't really trying to find out new information. He was really looking to test him to see, you know, what does Rav Aaron really know? You know, is he so impressive? And so Rav Meidan, at that time just, you know, Yaakov Meidan, Rav Meidan now is the Rosh Yeshiva, but young Yaakov, he walks up to this American rabbi, Rabbi Lichtenstein, and he says, you know, we're learning the sugya, and you know, what do you think about the Machlokas between Rashi and Tosos? And he's talking, and Rav Lichtenstein's sitting there, he's listening intently, and he's listening, and doesn't say a word. Rav Meidan's like, maybe he didn't understand, you know, he's American, maybe he's even less impressive than I thought he was. And so he slows down. He says, you know, we really think like this is the Machlokas. Do you think it's more like this? Do you think it's more like that? Lichtenstein's still just listening intently. And so Rav Meidan's like, okay, I'm going to slow it down. There's this guy called Rashi. There's a cover called Tosfos, the Kawan on the Gemara, and Lichtenstein's not saying a word. And finally Rav Meidan basically stops talking and says, well, what do you think? Legend has it that Rav Lichtenstein quoted 60 marmakomos, 60 sources, to explain everything going on in this Gemara. But Lichtenstein knew everything. He was extraordinary. He was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to us, and we're at a loss without him. Baruch Hashem, he had many talmidim. But one of the things that epitomized Rav Lichtenstein was that he listened entirely. If you were talking, he was not thinking. If you were talking, he was not planning what he was going to say. In the TED Talk we sent out beforehand, she quotes someone, I'm forgetting who, that most of us don't enter conversations in order to listen. Most of us enter conversations and we're listening for the sake of replying. What am I going to say now that you're talking? And so we stop really paying attention to and stop processing. Lichtenstein would listen, then he would process, then he would share. And if you ask him a question that required thought, he might process for 10 minutes because he was Lichtenstein. That's not where we're holding. I wouldn't recommend doing that. But this is actually something that very much has come to the forefront from a lot of people in the world for the past year. Because Zoom, for all of its incredible capabilities to connect the whole world, Baruch Hashem today, we had a family Zoom that had people from, obviously, Chicago, from Los Angeles, New York, Kayadua, from Israel, from all over, and we were all connected, we were all together. It's beautiful. One of the things that Zoom does terribly is allow more than one person to talk at the same time. Zoom has one box that highlights one opportunity to experience sound, and if anyone else tries to talk while I'm talking, or if I try to talk while you're talking, it inevitably does not go well. And so it's a media that we've actually been developing of just listening, waiting for the other person to finish talking, finish their thought, and then try and produce an answer. One of the mitos of shtika, not in the extremes, but in the practicality, is that you're actually going to listen to what someone else is saying. Mitzvah we should be zoka, that's part of our vod. And Mark Twain has a beautiful quote. He says that wisdom is the reward you get for a lifetime of listening when you would have rather talked, when you would have rather said something on your own. And we see that the value of not just blurting things out, of holding back, of thinking, is this going to be productive in so many ways? We see it physically, because physically we have two of most of our things. We have two hands, we have two eyes, we have two ears, we have two nostrils, but we only have one mouth. And so it's a little bit of, it's like cute, it's like, it's something that we learned maybe when we were little kids growing up, but the Orchos Tzedekim points out in paragraph Zion that maybe the reason why we only have one mouth is to suggest that we should spend more time using our eyes, using our ears, just using our noses, than we should be using our mouths. We should spend less time talking and more time listening, more time experiencing, more time taking things in. And we said, Shalak Lechak Mashtika from Pirkei Avos, and that some of the Kala Mishtuka, that there's no better medicine than silence. That's really how we're going to get further in our lives, to further appreciate and understand and experience the world. That being said, and this is a trope that we experience throughout all of the Sefer, that almost every Midah has to, in some way, shape, or form, connect to the opportunity to give Musar, to develop and to hear thoughts that will push me to be better, that Shtika is not appropriate, staying silent is not appropriate, or the extreme, I guess you could say, of shtika is not appropriate when there's a makar that needs to be made, when someone needs to be given musar, when someone's doing the wrong thing, and you need to tell them to fix their ways. And now at the top of page 6, we're going to do our last on shtika, and then we're going to get into, I guess we could say, a derivative of shtika. And that is one area that is so poignant and so necessary, and I've experienced it so many times in my life on both ends, that we're going to try, I guess we could say we could be makabel. This is a vav, we're going to try. This is one area in particular. It's very hard to listen to people. It's very hard to listen to an entire thing that someone's saying, particularly when it's not intelligent, but even when it is, it's very hard. Maybe we'll interrupt someone once in a while. But this is something that we can definitely do. This is something that we can work on. In paragraph Yud, it says, Im Adam Oso Darash, not there, in the bold. Im Adam Omer Laka Darash Yadas Kfar. Someone's about to tell you a Dvar Torah that you have heard already. They're going to tell you the Reb Moshe Feinstein on how Moshe and Aaron are really the same, that they're on the same level, but they weren't really on the same level, but they both achieved their same potential. You've heard that Dvar Torah a million times. Don't say a word. Shtok at Sheyigmar Dvar. Wait until they're done. Don't say anything. One, very simply, maybe they're going to tell you an element of this Dvar Torah. They're going to take it in a direction that you haven't heard before. And so you might actually learn something, even though you thought that you're not going to. But the other element is Gam Yesh Lo Hana Sheyomar Lecha Dvar. People get a geschmack from sharing Dvar Torah. If someone's about to tell you a Dvar Torah that you know, they're so excited about it. If you were like, oh, I heard that before. Oh, I know that story. Oh, yeah, I heard about that thing. Just let people tell you things. What are you losing out on? People get such a geschmack from it. Did you hear about that wonderful thing that happened to cousin Rivka? Yeah, I know about it. Oh, okay, fine. No, just let people tell you. What's the word? You're not missing out, but people love sharing. And so be excited, be surprised. You got to be honest. That's part of where shtika and sheker coincide. That's where they meet. That you don't want someone to feel foolish because they find out 2 days later that you've known longer than they have that so-and-so is expecting. But let people tell you things. Let people share things because it's exciting for us. And that's sort of wraps up our focus on shtika. And then there's another element of shtika that the Orchot Tzadikim introduces. And we'll look at this very, very quickly. And the idea of leitzanus. And really what the Orchot Tzadikim does is he, or maybe she, but our author points out that shtika has four derivatives, you could say, that are highly problematic, that we're going to turn into subsequent chapters. It's going to be 3 chapters plus a little bit of extra here at the end of this one. And all of these things fit into the Gemara Masechet Sota and then Beis Amud Aleph of people who are or not royal, not proper, not zoka to be mekabel pnei Shekhinah, that God doesn't like them. And this is all coming off of an appreciation that when you are silent, when you're embodying shtika and speaking only when necessary, only when appropriately, then the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to hang out with you. But God doesn't want to hang out with you when you are one of 4 people. Who are those 4 people? Leitzanin, people who are mockery, who are making mockery of things. Dibur Sheker, people who speak falsely. That's the next paragraph we're going to learn. Perek. And then the inverse MS. And then number 3, people who are chanufim, people who flatter unnecessarily and appropriately. And finally, people who speak Lashon Hara. And those are going to be our subsequent chapters as we go. And so just one thought on someone who mocks is that just like shtika is going to be productive, shtika is going to get us toward where we want to be, leitzanus, mocking people, mocking things, is going to pull us away. It's going to make people contract, make them not be as willing to step out of their comfort zone, not as willing to engage in this. Jokes sometimes might broaden people's minds. Oftentimes jokes are going to bring people in and make them less willing too engaged. And so I, without question, Rav David Beshefkin, I will tell me I'm totally wrong, and he'll talk all about the beauty of comedy, and he's got a lot to say on it. But when you mock things, when there's leitzanus happening, you end up crippling, you end up preventing us from really moving forward. And so if shtika is going to propel us forward, leitzanus is going to stop us. We can imagine, I mean, we've even experienced, you walk out of a fiery Musar Shmuz. You walk out of a beautiful tefillah. You're so fired up. And someone makes one leitzanus comment, and it undermines everything. It destroys the foundation that you've built. We don't want that to be the case. We want to stay far, far away from that. And so Shtika is really pushing forward. We want to keep that going. In the last 2 minutes, we're going to hit a couple points on Shekhar, but we'll really focus more next week, because if Shtika is supposed to be positive and I want to avoid something that's not productive, then lying is never going to be productive. And so whenever we're in a situation where we're confronted with, well, this is an awkward, I don't really know what to say here, rather than lie outright, it's always better to find a different avenue, a way to answer the question without answering the question directly. And so if someone asks you for something, don't lie and say, I don't have it, but figure out some other way to say and to not give it to them. You don't have to share things if you don't want to, but figure out another way. That applies with Jews, it applies with non-Jews, no matter what. We never want to explicitly, outright, say something that's not true. Because ultimately, maybe we'll just jump down to the very bottom of page 7. MS is something that's going to sustain, and it's going to last, whereas Sheker is not going to. If you want our speech, you want our D-board to move us forward, to move the world toward a better place, then it needs to be something that's going to stick around for a while. MS, I think we can see in the very, very, very last page, there are only two words written on it, just MS and Sheker. We see MS, this is kind of cute, but it's really what we're talking about. MS has a strong foundation. It has two legs to stand on. The Aleph, the Mem, and the Tet are all letters that are not going to fall. They're well supported. Whereas Sheker, Shin, Kuf, and Resh are all letters that only have one leg that are easy to tilt. Sheker is always going to fall eventually, meaning that you're not fulfilling your goal of the meat of Shtika by speaking Sheker. You're only going to do that by speaking MS. And so we could unpack Sheker more, and God willing, we will unpack Sheker more when we learn about MS next week. But just as a quick recap of what we discussed tonight, that the connection really between MS and Sheker, we just addressed that Sheker's not going to propel us forward, whereas effective shtika, effective speaking only when necessary and not unnecessarily, that's what's going to really help us. That's what's going to move us forward, as the Maharal explained to us. And when we think about our conversations can be broken down in a lot of ways. Ultimately, we have conversations that are Torah-focused and about mitzvos. We have conversations that can be productive. And there are conversations that are maybe parv that could be turned productive. And then, chas v'shalom, there are conversations that are negative, that are pulling us further away from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, further away from a life of Torah and spirituality. We want to embody Eleanor Roosevelt and be big people, talk about ideas, and not, God forbid, the opposite. And within that concept of pushing forward, of having speech that is propelling things positively, then we can appreciate that sometimes we're not going to talk, we're not going to say things, because we'll learn more, we'll gain more by listening, and sometimes we're actually giving by listening when someone really wants to share something, and we give them that opportunity. And of course, time when silence is not appropriate is when a rebuke needs to take place. And with that, we'll leave it. I'm happy to stick around for a few minutes, but I do highly recommend everyone, myself included, to go to the next program that Neil is running at 8 o'clock on the Zoom. I don't remember exactly which one it is, but the Journey of Inspiration. It will be featuring at least Ojeni Kohanchi, who's got a fascinating story coming from Iraq. I heard a little bit of Iran, maybe. I heard a little bit of it when we had Shabbos lunch with them years ago, and I've been encouraging Emma and the Kolo for literally the past 2.5 years to make this happen. I'm so excited that's happening. So I'm turning the recording off now. It's been a pleasure learning together, and God willing, next week we'll talk about Hanifus and Emma's. All right.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Zucker.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a wonderful night.